podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run.
So number one,
they're both
number one came in 2:38:39, and the last one's going to come in somewhere around 5 hours. That's pretty good, huh? It's a good spread over 17 and a half miles. But of course, the powerful Chris Runner came in at 3:24:59. Awesome. So, ran the Wapak Trail Race this morning. Had an excellent time. I'm in pretty good shape. It's a highly technical 17 and a half mile out and back that runs across four mountains: Barrett Mountain, New Ipswich Mountain, Pratt Mountain, and Wattatick Mountain, and turns around and runs back, so eight mountains. And it's about maybe 6,500 feet of give and take, of up and down, and technical in the sense that there's a lot of rocks and roots and some pretty steep bits, pretty coarse. Felt great. Tried using those EnduroLite capsules from Anthony today, and those seemed to work pretty good, pretty well. I had great energy coming in. I actually took maybe three or four people right in the last mile or so in the ski area section, because they were just walking, and I was still running, so I just went by them. And I had a nice kick, so I don't know, whatever I'm doing it right. Some goos. I had two bottles of that Heed stuff, which actually I wouldn't do that if I could do it again, because made me kind of nauseous in the beginning of the race, because all I had was that Heed stuff, and usually I go with one bottle of Heed, one bottle of water. But yeah, everything worked out fine. Feel nice and goofy tired. Rolled my left ankle a little bit, but nothing too serious. I saw some other people really wreck their ankles on this course. It's very difficult, and people come out of the woods all muddy and covered with dirt and covered with blood from taking spills, catching roots with their feet and everything. So that's trail running in New England, man. It's great. It's good fun. Good stuff. Hey ho, this is Chris. Hear that noise in the background? That's cicadas and tree frogs and that sort of thing, because it's getting dark, 7:30 at night. And usually, you know, in the summertime it's light out, but we'll probably have total darkness in another 10 minutes. So that this time of year it's tough in New England running. You know, because by the time I get home, it's dark. But I had to get the fur boy out today. He hasn't been getting enough running, and he's starting to get antsy. He goes nuts if he doesn't get his run in for a couple weeks. So he's pretty happy about this. Anyhow, got a lot going on. Got a couple episodes I'm doing here. I'll give you a little teaser. I'm going to interview, I've got it in the can. I just got to edit it up for this episode, episode 22, which would be the Mount Desert Island Marathon in Maine. I'm talking to Gary, the race director, and it's pretty cool. And then 23, I already did the interview today, too. I'm talking to one of the team of the Baltimore Running Festival, so the Baltimore Marathon, Baltimore. And I did this on sort of on purpose, because it's interesting, compare and contrast. And the Mount Desert Island is basically focused on only a marathon, keeping it small, keeping it quality, keeping it hard, and how to maintain that focus as a marathon with the scenery and the quality. And the Baltimore guys are kind of focused on how do we get to be like, you know, the next New York or the next Chicago? How do we make it bigger and better and include more people and more days and more events? And so it's an interesting trajectory, because I've seen both of them come up over the last few years. So it'd be interesting to see it. And there's no good or bad. It depends what you want. But it's something as a runner you want to consider. Been a busy week. I tried to take some vacation last week. That's why I was on the Cape. That's why we had that goofy stuff with the the girls. We were doing those fake commercials. Tell me if you like those or not. And didn't get much running in last week, because here's a tip for you. If one of your kids wants to run with you, run with them. So, you know, I'm running with my youngest daughter. She's a lot slower than I am and doesn't go as far as I do, but I'm not going to pass up that advantage. So going into this weekend, I had the Wapak Trail Race, which is this highly technical. I get some audio from that, too. And it took me like 3 hours and 24 minutes and 25 minutes, and I was psyched about that. Because it's a really hard race, and I felt awesome. I flew, and I'll give you some tips on that as well. So, you know, the taper, I think, did me well. And then this week, I'm doing my normal running. You know, I'm going to run Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, 6 to 9 miles. And then Saturday, I'm going to try to get 36 in, get a school starting up again, so I got to squeeze it around all those events. And that'll be my longest long run. I just want to do it for my confidence. I don't think I need to do it for the ultra. I could do 30, but I just want to do 36 for my confidence. I find that helps. Help me first time I ran a marathon. So I'm going to do that. Lots of stuff going on. You see that Gary Cowder, and if you've been on the website, my website, Run Run Live, I gave him a blog. He plugged into my blog so you can see Gary's comments. And, you know, he's not going to be a Pulitzer Prize winner, but he certainly has a certain amount of irony and passion that he writes with. It's pretty interesting to see Gary. All he's done and taken running back up over the last 3 years. And I'm going to be in another blog, too, so one for hiring. And if you listen to episode 21 with Zale, you know, I'm starting to get, if you're one of those LinkedIn people from the marathon group, welcome. What we do is we give some tips, we do an interview, we give some more tips, and we play a little music, and that's it. We get it in 40 minutes. So, you know, with that, I'll save some more of the updates for the next one. We'll try to get two episodes in this week. Hope you enjoy it. Bye.
And now for the equipment check.
Yo, 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 this is Chris. I'm out here in the dog park. Me and the fur boy, taking him for a walk. Come on. Good boy. Yeah. Got this park down here in Harwich where I vacation. It's full of dogs. People have them all off leash so they all can kind of socialize. It's kind of cool. Let them all sniff out and do all those doggy things. So, I got an equipment, piece of equipment that's mandatory here if you have a dog, which is a leash. And so what do? I don't do anything special. I'm kind of a minimalist running guy, so you would expect it. I got a 6-foot regular strap leash, and what you do is you take it, and you tie knots in it. And just by, you know, tying a single knot, you know, crossing it over itself and pulling it tight, it makes a knot. And you put a couple of knots in there, keep it from pulling through your hands if the dog bolts. And you put one right at where you need to hold it, where the dog heels. So, you know, a lot of times I'm running with a water bottle in one hand and the dog leash in the other. And Buddy's good, you know, you got to train your dog first before you can take him running. He's got to be able to heel at least a little bit. I mean, Buddy isn't 100% heel trained, but he's a good disciplined runner. He doesn't dash around a lot. So you got to train him to run with you, to heel a little bit, to run on leash. But once you do, you can get him to keep from pulling. He pulls a little bit when I first start if I'm out with the club, because he wants to be out in front. But once we get going, he gets warmed up. He heels right with me when I'm holding the leash, so I can just loosely hold the leash in one hand and a water bottle in the other. Whatever else I got to carry. So that's it. You take that regular old leash, 6-foot leash, you get it, whatever your favorite leash store is, and put a couple knots in it so it doesn't slip through your hand, and that's what works for me.
And now for our featured interview.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Gary?
I'm doing very well.
So why don't you state your name and position for us, just to give us an intro here.
My name is Gary Allen. I'm the founder and race director of the Mount Desert Ion Marathon up here in Bar Harbor, Maine.
Yep.
Acadia National Park. We put together a race beginning in 2002, which has steadily grown to one of the premier destination marathons in the whole U.S., and we're very excited about that.
Right, and the reason you know, I wanted to talk to you, Gary, is that I've worked with you in the past to cover this race, and
it seems to me, and maybe it's just because I'm from New England, so I'm biased, but it seems to me that it's one of the most beautiful courses. You know, that's really what you get going for you here, is this is a very pretty course at a very pretty time of year in New England.
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest compliments that we ever heard were competitors that showed up for some of the early editions, nicknamed our race Big Sur East. And as we know, Big Sur is out on the other coast and
right.
Noted for being extremely scenic. And that's actually grown now, where people are saying we're not Big Sur East, we're even better than Big Sur. So
we're bigger than Big Sur.
Bigger than Big Sur. So, you know, I'm my family's been in Maine since the late 1700s, and so I'm pretty pro East Coast anyway. But I haven't happened to have been out to Big Sur to check that race out. But I think it's a huge compliment because I know they do a good job. But the
right.
defining characteristics. Sorry about that. But the defining characteristics of our course are, of course, we're set on Mount Desert Island, which is home to Acadia National Park. And it has a lot of amazing geographic features, such as Cadillac Mountain,
right?
Which is the first place in the continental U.S. to see the morning sunrise. The course thankfully doesn't go up Cadillac Mountain, but it goes between Door Mountain and very near there, so you get to see all those mountains and so forth. And then we go along seaside cliffs. We travel along a geographic feature called Somme Sound, which is the only fjord on the eastern seaboard, U.S. eastern seaboard. So that's really, really beautiful. And a lot like the famed Boston Marathon course, we travel through six distinct small, quaint village centers, and that makes the course really fun and more like a journey. It's a point-to-point course. We laid that out because I felt like that marathons, in some cases, some courses, not all, but some courses, were starting to be kind of contrived affairs, and that, you know, people would lay out 26.2 miles just for the sake of covering 26.2 miles, and there was no real natural progression to it.
Right.
A la Boston Marathon. I think when Boston clearly is the granddaddy of them all as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, when you run from Hawkington to Copley Square, you really get a sense of being on a journey. And I think
right.
when we set this race up, we really wanted that kind of a feel, and I think we've succeeded.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's not like doing loops in a parking lot. And, you know, you cover that geography pretty quickly, you know, but being from the area, you know, seeing that national park, the Acadia National Park, is where the famous people who built the roads out there.
Well, the Rockefellers back during the Depression built a network of gravel carriage roads.
Right.
There's 52 miles of them, and we're lucky to be able to train on them pretty much year-round. You can certainly, they're now groomed for cross-country skiing, a lot of them, but they're such excellent gravel roads. They're car-free. They wind through mountains with ocean vistas and past lakes and ponds. And
right, right. And, so there's no strip malls or high-rises here. It's all basically trees and rocks, the ocean, a lot of nice sort of alpine lake-type things. You've
That's
got
right.
the fjord, which is basically a big granite cleft into the side of the landmass that you run the outside of, right?
Exactly. Well, just so no one is misunderstands me, the marathon course is all on paved roads. None of it is on the carriage roads in Acadia.
Right.
It's all on paved roads. The carriage roads I was describing were just a feature of the area, which also lends it well to being a destination marathon, because other family members can come up here. Often there's significant others or children or aunts and uncles that like to accompany marathoners, and there's an awful lot for other family members to do in the park while your favorite marathoner is marathoning, or after or before. So, but to go on about the fjord, yeah, it's basically carved out of granite by glaciers and open to the ocean, and it's, you know, for it's basically, I think the definition of a fjord is that a mountain keeps keeps going underwater. You know, the sides of the mountain keep right on going from the water level up and from the water level down. And so it is a very, very pristine and beautiful place.
And when we're talking, you know, we're running through villages, we're talking, you know, postcard Maine, the, you know, the red barns and the lobster boats and the lobster traps and all that sort of stuff. These are towns that are nestled into the landscape.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you go through, you know, Seal Harbor, and that's you go literally right by some fairly notable people's summer cottages, and cottages in quotations. These are traditional cedar shingle cottages, but in some cases they're 20, 30, 40 rooms, and you know, you go by very close to Martha Stewart's house, and you go close to Dick Wolf's house, who's the creator of Law and Order on TV, and a lot of those kind of places. And these homes, you know, were built back in the a lot of them back in the, you know, 20s and 30s,
right,
and before, and when the early rusticators from, you know, Boston, New York,
right,
and Philadelphia came.
Yep,
came
the robber barons.
Exactly.
Yeah, because the train goes up there, so you can take the train out of Boston. In the old days, that's how they all got up there, is they all rode the train up.
And by steamer.
Yep.
But yeah, I think sort of flashing forward to our race, we're just really proud to we limit the field to 1,000 runners, and we're about to shut off entries. We're almost full. I think that there's about 100 spots left, and that is it. And we limit the field for two reasons. Is we feel that we're only 7 years old. This will be our seventh edition. We want to dot the I's and cross the T's. We don't want it to turn into a circus and not manage the thing to perfection. And we want every runner to have the ultimate experience as far as lots of volunteer support. I think we are, you know, almost a volunteer for every two runners. And I think that's sort of unheard of, to have that many volunteers for this many runners. And again, before we sit down and meet about growing the race, potentially growing the race, we want to get it right, and we want to keep doing it right, and then we'll carefully grow it from there. So
it's the marathon. Do you do any other distances for other people in there?
We
Are you
don't
considering that.
We don't. We, you know, again, my feeling on marathoning, and I've been running marathons myself since 1977. I ran my first one, and I ran my last one back in May here at Sugarloaf. So I've kept it up pretty well myself. But my feeling with marathons is in some cases, not all cases, but in some cases, race directors, and I think, you know, I don't want to generalize too much, but I think races put on by runners generally don't go this way, and races put on by business people do go this way. And I think that's adding all these other events within the event, you know, a relay,
yeah,
and a 5K option and a 10K option and a half marathon option and all these crazy things. And I think that, for me, it takes away the purity of the sport and where the attention should be focused.
Yeah, you know, I think you're, you know, it's editorializing, you know, which way you go, but the half marathon has become so popular now,
yeah,
that for old guys like us, it's kind of strange. Yeah, you know, and I've shown up to local marathons in Massachusetts, and, you know, it's a two-loop marathon, and you go past the first loop, and you're all alone, and you get back to the, you know, you finish the marathon, you go in, and there's no food left, you know, there's nothing but stains on the carpet, you know, because you had four times the number of people in the half marathon that you did in the marathon, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, for instance, I was at a unnamed marathon in southern Maine a couple of years ago, and it featured some races within the race. And all the finishers, and granted, great job to all of them. I'm completely pro-running. I'm not meaning to diminish their work at all. But all the finishers for the lesser distances were streaming across, and literally, the marathon winner came in sort of in a pack of other runners that had run half the distance,
yeah,
and he was missed. The announcers didn't see him come in. I could tell it was a marathoner just by the amount of salt on the guy, and, you know, his build and the pace he was running. And I, you know, immediately I just, you know, put my hands on my head and I went, my goodness, they missed the winner. No tape, no announcement, no anything. They quickly realized that this, you know, the marathon winner had come through. But, I mean, that to me is not doing justice to the sport. And I'm kind of a purist. I'm old school for sure. And one of the things we're doing here is we're keeping it about the marathon. And,
yep.
You know, we could add a pogo stick division, and we could add a roller skate division, and we could add, you know, all these things. But like Boston, again, I have so much respect for the Boston Marathon and what they do, and Dave McGilvery and his team. But one of the things that just impresses me beyond anything is everyone wearing a bib number on Patriots Day in Hopkinton, Mass, is all heading the same direction, and everybody gets the same respect. And
yeah,
and I like that. I like that a lot. And so I'm going to be really resistant to adding other events within the event. Now, should we expand race weekend and maybe have an event the day before? Maybe, you know, there are several other ways you could cater to other people's needs. But at this
yeah.
point, we're a pure marathon. We're an old school marathon. And you're right, we do run through some very quaint white clapboard New England, Maine villages with, you know, church steeples and just extremely scenic areas, lobster boats moored offshore and the whole works.
And the and it's the fall, too, so the leaves are starting to turn, so you're getting the full foliage or very good foliage at that point in time. And this is a lot of the mountains you're running through are hardwood forest, so
yeah,
you're getting the color too.
We definitely have you know, outrageous foliage. It pretty much perfectly peaks. Again, our race date is October 19th, and the foliage seems to just wait till that day. Again, as the you know, race director, I want to say it's peak foliage that day, but it really the foliage and Mother Nature all seem to conspire to put on the best show possible, and we do have a lot of hardwood, you know, mixed forests, and, you know, reds and oranges and so forth, and, you know, we've had runners from all over the country and all across Canada and abroad come, and they can't believe that the leaves are real. They think we've done something to them. They're like, what is all this color? And it's just like, well, it's an annual event, so.
Yeah, yeah. And so you must be getting good pull from Canada and from the international, especially with the currency exchange the way it is this year.
We do as a destination marathon, and we clearly market ourselves as a destination marathon, and sort of my feeling on what separates a marathon, a sort of a mega marathon speaks for itself, New York, Chicago, Boston, and those things. And then destination marathons, I think, fall into a scenery, you know, sightseeing options beyond the marathon. I mean, you can run the marathon and go whale watching all in the same day, or
yes.
or rock climbing, or cycling, or go beachcombing, or whatever. But I think our race, last time I checked the database, which was yesterday, we had runners from every state except West Virginia. So if there are any West Virginia runners that perhaps might hear this, go onto the website and send me an email, and the first West Virginia runner that contacts me will comp your entry.
Yeah, there you go. Free entry for West Virginia. All right.
So we've got every state except West Virginia. I think we've got five Canadian provinces covered, and you're exactly right. With the high value of the euro, we're seeing international runners. A lot of runners from England now have sort of taken note of us, and I believe they like to fly into Boston and drive up through the New England coast. So,
yeah,
that's sort of fun.
Or you can still jump on the train, right? If you don't like to drive in Boston, which none of us would recommend driving in Boston.
You got to know your way, right?
Yeah, it's a bit like I don't know. It's a bit like Calcutta sometimes.
Right, right.
It's kind of scary to drive in there.
Yeah.
We have our own rules, but no one really knows what they are except for us.
I hear you.
So that's great. You're getting all those people from Europe and other places. There's travel agents right now in Brussels putting together package deals for the MDI marathon. That's
yeah,
great.
Could well be.
So what's your web address for this year?
MDIMarathon.org.
Okay, so it's MDI. Got it. Mary
Mount Desert
Dango.
Island. MDIMarathon.org.
Yeah, it's such a pretty place, and I would definitely spend some time up there eating some clams and some lobsters.
Yeah, I think people get pretty excited about lobsters. It's funny, you know, I grew up here as a kid and so forth, and you know, it's kind of when you have a lot of something right in front of you, you don't get that excited about it. But you know, I still am known to gobble down a few lobsters, but I think the people that show up get really excited about lobsters. So and they're pretty tasty morsels. I guess Maine's noted for lobsters and potatoes. So there you
yeah,
go.
Potatoes. Yeah, and you guys have a pretty strong running community, given the sort of semi-isolation in the wintertime up there.
We
produce a lot of strong runners from that area.
Well, I think it's funny because I think I grew up out on a little offshore island called Great Cranberry Island, and per capita, I think we've had the island's total year-round population, even when I was growing up and currently, you know, range anywhere from 30 to 50 people in the winter. And from a place as small as that, we've had, I think, 12 people qualify and run in the Boston Marathon. Well, per capita, you know, that's, 20-30% of the total population or more, you know, 50%, you know, depending on what the population was doing at the time. And the reason being is, growing up as a kid out there, there were never enough kids to field a proper team to play softball or soccer or anything, and
right.
Naturally, the you know one of the best sports you can do alone as an individual is running, and so I think that has followed suit. You know, this place is the Outer Islands, and certainly Mount Desert Island has produced an awful lot of great runners, and we have a great host running club, Crow Athletics, and. Those guys have, you know, really made their mark in running, and
you know,
we've had some great performances, and there is a real good running community up here.
Yeah, some serious runners, and I guess that's true. You know, you get a lot of isolation, you get a lot of time to train, right?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a lot to be said with, you know, why the Kenyans are so good, and I think one of the reasons they're so good is there's not a lot of distraction. I think, you know, if I've never been to Kenya, but it seems like that you probably there's not a whole. It's not like you're going to go to the mall necessarily. You're going to go running, and I think more and more runners, you know, world class and so forth, go to areas where they can focus on the running and leave a lot of the other fluff behind. So you know, we haven't seen you'd call it a true honest world class runner come from here. But we certainly have had our share of world-class runners that have run up here. Bill Rogers has been known to train here, and our, you know,
yep.
Certainly our own Joan Benoit Samuelson and Frank Shorter stopped by a few years ago and went for a run. Certainly past his prime, but was just blown away by it. And I think Steve Spence was up here back when he won a medal in the World Championships, and. You know, other notables have come up for some training time. So, again, anyone that's listening to this, you know, I know that high altitude is where a lot of the runners like to go to really get trained up. But I'd invite any world-class runners to come up here and check us out, because this could be the next big secret in training up here. So,
yeah, well, like you said, it's got a lot of the prerequisites, right? And there's a little bit of altitude. There's some mountains around you can get to fairly easily.
Oh, you're going to be a strong hill runner. If you train here, there's no course in the world that I've ever seen that you wouldn't be ready for. We don't have high altitude as far as getting your lungs ready for that, but as far as being a hill runner, you know, we sort of chuckle when we get to Heartbreak Hill on the Boston course training from here. And I probably should lead right into, you know, runners are going to want to know how tough the MDI marathon course is, the Mount Desert Island marathon course is. It's
sure.
Hilly. It's rolling hills. But I'm sort of as a race director, as a runner, as a race founder, I've noticed a trend toward, again, I think business people setting up race courses rather than runners setting up race courses, this flat, fast qualifier thing. And it sort of sickens me because I don't think it's really what marathon running is about. I think marathon running isn't always about trying to outdo the other guy with more net elevation loss or flatter than a billiards table. I think that you lay out a course that makes sense, that's not contrived, that's not, you know, 80 million laps around a parking lot, and you lay out a course which tests people. And
yeah.
Then it starts to get a, you know, it starts to get a sort of a mystique all its own. I mean, you know, when you turn at the Newton Fire Station, and I'm talking about the Boston course and the amount of respect I have for that race, when you turn at the Newton Fire Station, you know then that you got your work cut out for you. You know what's coming, and it's sort of legendary terrain through there. And now we've got hills, but for the common marathoner, we're not going to see a world record on this course. We just aren't.
But it's not overwhelmingly difficult. You just have to train for the course.
You've got to train for the course. But for
it's
the
got no mountains in it.
No, for the common marathoner, I think again it's been drilled into their heads so much that flat, fast qualifier that's what you want.
Yeah,
and
a lot of those courses are really ugly and industrial too, is what I've found over the last few years. So they sort of sacrifice the quality of the course to get the flatness. The only one that I would say is actually a great course in that way is the local Bay State Marathon, which I think has been pretty true to that, because originally it was designed 20 years ago as a qualifying course, but it's still got the river and the geography and all that stuff. So.
Uh-huh. I ran that just prior to the 100th anniversary of Boston and enjoyed it. But again, going on a rolling course, I think rolling courses, and I've run flat courses and I've run downhill courses. I've run personally 70 marathons, and 53 of them have been below 3 hours. So
awesome.
I've got some experience, and anyway, as far as is rolling courses, I think a rolling course leaves the average runner less fatigued than a flat course because you use different muscle groups, climbing and descending.
Yep.
Whereas a flat course, you engage one set of muscles, and that's it all day long. And I think they wear you down. Now, for a world record attempt, go to Berlin, you know, run 4:40 pace for, you know.
Well, it depends on your training, right?
Exactly.
I think why people get afraid of hills is they don't train for them.
Right.
I'll give you a perfect example. Last year when I was running Boston, I was struggling a little bit in Newton, and I'm like, you know, this is going to be a long slog if I'm struggling at 17 miles. And then when we came in the hills, since I had been training hills, like you said, switching muscle groups, I felt fantastic. It was like, it was a relief to hit the hills because it was the downhill that was beating me up.
Exactly.
And I got a big wave of energy just by having those hills.
Exactly.
Because that's what I've been training for, right?
Right.
So you're right. It depends how you train, and it's not overwhelming.
No. So, again, I don't want to scare people away from this course that it's going to be one of those nosebleed-type situations that you can't run. It's a fast course. You definitely need to, even if you're training in Florida, go find some bridges or run on the beach. I mean, that'll make you wicked strong running in sand. But I think that we've got a good, tough, honest course. You know, it's the type of thing that when you get the medal around your neck at the finish line, you know, you're going to know you ran a marathon, and you're going to feel good about it. And you know, we do have a lot of Boston qualifiers every year, and a lot of people come up to us afterwards and say, you scared us so bad telling us to not go out too fast that I actually ran a PR because I ran smart listening to your advice.
Yeah.
I ran easy the first 10 miles, and I never felt better in my life. Coming in. So, you know, I think that, again, you know, as runners, a lot of people on our race committee are runners. We know how to manage runners. We know what to tell them as far as advice. I think our website has tremendous amounts of information on it, everything from tips of what to do in the area to training schedules and certainly great photography and maps and all kinds of great features.
All right. Well, we're coming up against our 25 minute mark here.
Well, Well, Chris, thank you.
I can just imagine somebody from like Phoenix, Arizona, showing up for this course in October. The 360 degree change in the environment, yeah, must be overwhelming for people who haven't seen this part of the country before. How just overwhelmingly beautiful it is.
Well, I think it's funny because it's sort of a quaint area, and when town is filled with runners, it's sort of like it becomes its own little sort of microclimate of runners, and people really get excited when they get here, and you can just see it on their faces, and they just look around and have a great time. So,
all right,
thank you very much for having me on, and I hope people have to enjoy what we had to say.
Yeah, I think it's a good race, and we'll look to see what I'm doing this fall. Maybe I'll swing by.
Well, there's a bib number with your name on it anytime you want one.
All right, great.
All right,
thanks, Gary.
Thank you, Chris.
Yep. Bye bye.
Bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
I'm down by the pond, and the sun is just sinking. It's gone behind the hills, but the last sliver of sunlight's going away. It looks like a pretty clear night, so I should be able to see you. Got my headlamp with me, though, in case it gets rough. The only problem in the woods is, putting your feet on something you can't see when you're trying to run. Boo Dog's out here having a swim. And, he just jumped in. He's swimming around the pond. But I got to put his stuff on him. It's the end of the month. I got to give him his heartworm medication. Remind me to do that. Yeah, I feel kind of bad because I sort of have this detente with the wild animals that they don't come in my patch during the day, and I won't go in their turf at night, and I'm sort of violating that credo. So hopefully we won't tangle with any, have a scuffle with any coyotes, or a kerfuffle with any coyotes. So I got a tip for you. A couple gratuitous tips. One is these shorts. I'm wearing these Reebok shorts that I really like. Oh, actually, these are New Balance shorts, but they're split shorts, but they're not real high split shorts. And when I was on the mountains on Sunday in my race, they really started to bind once they got wet. So, it's fairly vertical, these climbs, but they were keeping me from really lifting my leg real high. They were binding. So watch that. If you got some real steep hills, you don't want shorts that are going to bind. And the other thing that was really cool in the race is I ate some of those Electro Enduralite tablets Anthony gave me from Hammer Nutrition, and I really think they made a difference. I had a ton of energy coming in at the end of the race. The last hour of the race, I was flying. I was chewing people up. So I think those made a difference. I need more data points, but I think those Enduralites really do the trick. So anyhow, there's a couple of tips for you. One last equipment check. My old Chevy truck has the third door with the little plastic handle on it that breaks. I've replaced it four times, so I went on the internet, found a company called Stealth Products. They made an aluminum version, an airplane aluminum version, and I switched that out. So if you have an old Chevy and you're sick of breaking the handle in the back, especially when it gets cold up here, it gets brittle, put one of those aluminum handles in. It'll never break again, and it's easy. All right, have a good day.
Okay, folks, that's it. Episode 22 in the can. And tomorrow, or whenever I get to it, I got another interview. I interviewed the Gene from the Corrigan Sports team about the Baltimore Racing Festival, the event that is in October, and some more friends of mine there. And we'll talk about that and some other great stuff, so stay tuned to that. Thanks for coming out, and I'll see you out there. Leave you with some music here. It's a little long. It's a five-minute song. These PodSafe Music Network guys, they are random in their song length, so this one's about 5 minutes long. It's going to put me a little bit over my 40-minute barrier, but I liked it. It's acoustic. It's by Tuck, and it's called Little Miss Maine. So you get that Maine tie-in there. I should have looked for something that had something to do with lobsters, but it's Maine. So, hey, we'll see you out there. She's good in every way now.
now she's leaving for a better day. Travel on, my lady. I've known her for some time. Thoughts of love, they run through my mind. But now she's leaving it all behind. So won't you sail on, let you fly away, sing another song for another day. Miss Maine, who was her name? She's jumping town to play the dame, leaving all my love in vain. I'm not saying she's right or wrong, she just left you feeling so strong, so I just stay here where I belong. You sail on, let you fly away, sing another song, and I think of you in a different way. Into the box, well, you know I've been something lost, and y'all just there for to paper on your cards. What can you say? Oh, what can you say? What can you do?
Listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.